GoDaddy.com. Use the code BLU139 to get 10% off any combination of purchases at GoDaddy.com. See site for details. Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Tango Tango Papa 1373, July 12, 2010.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Interstate 40 in eastern Oklahoma. It's been a couple of days since I did the last podcast. Night before last, I spent over by Kingman, Arizona, and I had really poor connectivity over there. The Verizon air card that I have wouldn't connect to anything at all, which was kind of surprising. There's no Verizon service at Kingman, Arizona, apparently, at least as far as data goes. Phones might be a different story, but there's no... you'd think that the Verizon would be there, but apparently not. And then the Sprint, as far as the hotspot on my phone, it worked, but it was just 1X. And so I didn't even attempt to record a podcast or try to let alone try to upload anything. So skipped that. And then last night I spent last night at Tucumcari, New Mexico, but I had intended to record a podcast, but then I was answering some Facebook messages. And you know, the trouble with Facebook is that, and I don't know if you can turn this feature off or not, I guess I need to do some research, but the trouble with Facebook is the Facebook chat, and so someone started chatting with me, and I got kind of tied up with that, and, by the time I got done chatting, answering the messages and chatting and answering email, it was time to go to bed. So, no podcast. So in any case, this load that I have, I picked up at Santa Fe Springs, California. It delivers on the 13th at, I think like 10 p.m., I believe, something like that, maybe 8 p.m. on the 13th at Lebanon, Tennessee. And so today's, as I record this, today is the 11th. So I am kind of going right by my house, and so I decided I'm going to stop at home this evening and then probably leave sometime tomorrow afternoon and go on, head on over to Lebanon, Tennessee. And so right now I've still got a ways to go. Let me see what the GPS says. 98 more miles to travel, so I've still got, I'd say, a good hour and a half or a bit more, kind of depending. So it's been a fairly nice couple of days. I was kind of surprised at how cool it was over in, in California and kind of the Southwest in general. There were some parts that where it was hot, like Needles, California. Anytime you go to Needles, California in the summer, which is basically, it's right along I-40 after you cross from Arizona into California, and you go just 5 miles or 7 miles, and then you go through Needles. That part of the world is usually always hot, you know, in the summertime. And so it was up above 100 degrees there. Wasn't as hot as it could be. You know, it was just like 104 or something like that. It wasn't nearly as hot as it could have been, because it's not unusual at all for it to be 114, 115, 117, even 120. It can be very, very hot in that area. And, you know, I don't think I've ever seen it 120, but I have gone through there when it was like 117. So that's a very hot place in the summertime. But it was just maybe, I don't know, it was just 104 or something when I went through there. But then the rest of the areas, it was really surprising. It was like 80s, you know, and over there in where I unloaded at in Southern California, it was, and even at Ontario, which is more inland, it was getting down, you know, it was like low 60s. And then I saw a thing on the internet, I think yesterday I saw a thing, or maybe it was last night, you know, record cold and, you know, or cool temperatures in Los Angeles. Now, right here where I'm at, you know, in eastern Oklahoma, let's see what my... It's 87 degrees, so it's a little warmer. It's been kind of... It's kind of overcast. The sun was out earlier, but it's... Obviously, the sun's down now, and there's some clouds in the sky, so there's a little bit of overcast going on. Haven't really seen any rain. Maybe just a couple of times there were some sprinkles and here and there, and then that was it. So it's been fairly cool, actually, you know, compared to what it could be, particularly for the Southwest. So, you know, but it's, the weather's the weather, and the weather just happens, and what are you going to do? You just have to live through it. That's why we build shelters, to protect ourselves from it, you know, and kind of stabilize our environment. So, anyway, I've been, I guess, up to just my regular old stuff. One of the things I've been kind of experimenting with a little bit is Pandora. A lot of people have heard of Pandora. It's kind of an interesting service. I'd heard of it a lot. I never did really sign up or create an account on there. So I created a Pandora account, you know, and there you can get a free Pandora account, username and password. And, you know, I just wanted to check the service out and see how it works, particularly on my phone. And so I created an account. And so the way Pandora works, you put in a name of a song or an artist, and then Pandora will kind of give you a list, depending on, you know, what it is. It'll give you a list to, you know, so you can further kind of narrow down and make sure you got the right thing. And then it sort of creates a playlist out of that. And so it can be as obscure as you want it to be. It could be, you know, popular music, or it can be classical music, or whatever. It can be some fairly obscure music if you want it to be. And then the beauty of it is that, you know, kind of depending on what type of music you've put in there, particularly, you know, with classical music, a lot of classical pieces can tend to be sort of obscure. You don't really, maybe you've heard them before in movies or what have you. You don't know the name of it, because the names tend, you know, classical pieces tend to be sort of obscure a lot of times. Same way with the artist names. The classical artist names tend to be sort of out, you know, they're not really ordinary names. They're sort of out of the ordinary, or so it seems. And at least the music that we regard as the, you know, the great classics, So, you know, I mean, not even sure how to pronounce them, you know, like Shostakovich, how do you spell that? Or Stravinsky, Tchaikovsky, you know. We've all heard those, you know, Beethoven certainly, we've heard those names. Bach is another one. We've heard that name a lot, but there's a lot of them that, like Sibelius, and, you know, there's some different names, and then you have different performers, because classical music tends to be performed by orchestras and so on and so forth. So it's interesting because you can, you know, I've listened to some different, you know, mostly classical music, but it, if you hear something that you like, you know, and a lot of times I can immediately tell if I'm going to like something. Sometimes it takes, you got to listen more than once to decide whether you like a particular piece of classical music, that style of music, but, and sometimes that can be true for popular music, but usually I can kind of quickly tell, particularly if I really like something right off the bat. Pandora allows you to bookmark it. You can either bookmark the artist or bookmark the song, and obviously in the case of classical music, you know, you bookmark the song. So, at least as far as classical music goes, it's an interesting way of sort of discovering different music. And of course, there's a thumbs up thing you can click, and you know, which I guess kind of tells Pandora that this is, you like this music. Is there anything that's kind of similar to it? Or you thumbs down, and if you say thumbs down, then it immediately goes on to something else, and it probably tries to add. You know, it, what they're doing is, they're taking things like you know, the well, in the case of classical music, they're taking the genre. You know, is it Baroque, the Baroque period, Baroque style? Is it up tempo, fast tempo, or is it a sort of a slower piece? Or you know, and they're using different aspects of it. You know, kind of matching that together. They're calling it the DNA of music. They're sort of mixing, you know, kind of trying to figure out what the DNA of the music is, what sort of the elements that go together to sort of make that music match other music, and then kind of feeding you some more pieces that are sort of similar. And so it's a great way of discovering music, at least classical music, that you've never heard before. Now, I don't know how that works necessarily with popular music. I've never, not really interested in that, although I like popular music, but I just, you know, it's, but it, but I could see where it would be an interesting way of discovering music that you're not really familiar with. And so it's a very, very interesting service, and I can see why people would probably be willing to pay a subscription to it, because then you know, you get some added benefits out of it. Now, so far I haven't paid subscription, or I'm not to that point yet, but, and I don't listen to all that much music anyway, but it is a very interesting service, and I see what the appeal is, you know, because there's been plenty of different services that have tried streaming, but Pandora is kind of doing it a little bit differently, and obviously they've added they figured out some way of adding value to it, where it becomes kind of a valuable service. It does, it's interesting, it does seem to work on a 1X connection. Obviously, it's going to work even better on a 3G connection, but it works just fine on a 1X connection. And, you know, so overall, I'm pretty impressed with it. We're to the point now where streaming radio actually is a viable option. Now, when I was going across Arizona and New Mexico, there were some, obviously there's some places where you're going to lose cell service, depending, you know. But you can lose cell service, and in that case it just stops, and then whenever the get your phone has service again, it automatically restarts. So, but we really are pretty, you know, in certain areas of the country, we're pretty much to the point where you could just continue to listen, and, you know, you might have a dropout here and there, but chances are it's just going to work. When I was out there in California this time, I was kind of thinking about, you know, why is California's politics, it's long had this reputation for being kind of really kooky, and there's some really kooky politics in California. And I got to thinking about that, and I believe the reason that the politics are so insane and why they produce so many kind of insane people is really kind of tied in a way to the prosperity of the state. California is a super prosperous state in many ways. Any way you want to measure it, it has been a very prosperous state. And, you know, you just drive through Southern California or drive through San Francisco and other parts of it, and it's just, you know, the prosperity is there on display. And I think what has happened, because it was it's been such a super prosperous place to live and to work, the parents, in a lot of cases, ended up spoiling their kids, giving them too much. Giving them too much too soon, giving them stuff without, you know, not having the kids earn it. And that has resulted in all kinds of social problems. And it's resulted in, you know, really kind of insanity on the part of many people. And so that's where the insane politics have kind of come from. It's because, you know, not that prosperity itself is bad, it's not, but the problem is that people have, it's enabled people to kind of spoil their kids, and the wrong, a spoiled kid, you know, the wrong side of their ego sort of develops, and ends up being exacerbated, and then you end up with all kinds of ills that have been going on for a long time. And so it has really resulted in sort of a really insane type of politics. Now, I think that's also happened in other places, certainly in different cities and different parts of the country and the world. It has happened, but it's particularly happened in California. And again, you just take a trip to, you know, Southern California or San Francisco, and the places, you know, those places are, those cities are just unbelievably prosperous. And so you've had some very, very spoiled people that were born and raised there. And of course, then, you know, from one generation to the next, it just becomes worse and worse and worse. The social ills begin to kind of promulgate, and you got the state that you have today, where it's the state itself is almost bankrupt. And it's really on a kind of an unsustainable course. And of course, our nation as a whole is kind of to that point as well. So it's not that prosperity itself does it, it's that it goes back to what I keep saying. The general morality level of people is, especially within the past 30 years, is really in decline. Now, when I say morality, I know a lot of people have a knee-jerk reaction to that word. And I think what I mean when I say that, what, you know, to be more specific, the real problem is all of the kids that have been born outside of marriage. And not every kid that is born outside of marriage, I'm not saying that every one of them is going to turn out rotten, every one of them is going to turn out bad. No, I'm not. I'm just saying statistically, you take a group of kids, you take a group of kids in aggregate that is born, you know, they're born outside of marriage, they don't know who the dad is, the mom's screwing around with some boyfriend or whatever. You take a, you know, the group as a whole, those kids statistically, and it's statistically provable, that they're not going to do as well in school, they're going to have more problems, you name the problems, they're going to have more of them because both parents weren't present. Now, just now, on the other side of the coin, having both parents present is not a guarantee that the kid's going to turn out great. But statistically, kids do have a better chance if both parents are present. I do think that you could say that, and I really have no way of proving it, but this is just, I can surmise it, my opinion. Kids as an aggregate that are born outside of marriage with no dad, no, don't know who the dad is, etc., 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 those kids are going to be more suggestible. And so therefore they're going to be more prone to not really knowing who their friends are and who their enemies are, who they should really kind of stay away from and who they should be attracted to. They may be completely confused about that, and you know, in fact, they may, wrong may look right and right may look wrong. And I think that's how we ended up with Obama as president and Pelosi and Reid kind of running the Congress. What put it over the top were all of those out-of-wedlock kids that have been happening over the past 30, 40 years. And one of the things that's just really bleak, that really make America's future, and probably a lot of other countries as well, bleak, but certainly America, over 50% of all kids, not just inner-city kids, all kids are being born outside of marriage. Over 50%. That's a shocking statistic. And that tells me that the future of the country, with that many kids being born outside of marriage, no dad present, so on and so forth, you're really injecting with that a huge number of future citizens, future voters that are going to be suggestible. They're going to tend to be dependent. They're going to tend to look at government as kind of going to, you know, some, you know, it's going to come along and save them. You know, in many cases, they're raised on, you know, they've been raised, mom's supported by welfare or whatever, because dad's not around, welfare's there, they're dependent, they learn to become dependent, and then they, chances are, they're going to replicate that lifestyle. And so they're not self-reliant. They've kind of been robbed of that. You're going to end up with more violence because, you know, people that have been robbed of, you know, you have the spoiled kid type thing, you know, where they just, they begin to, they hate the basically they try to bite the, oftentimes they'll try to bite the hand that feeds them. They hate their, you know, let's say you have a spoiling mom, or it could be a spoiling dad if dad's present, but one or both parents spoil the kid, then the kid just expects the stuff. but at the same time, they hate those parents. But then they you know, it's a, they expect, you know, they've got, they're dependent. They expect the money. Somebody's going to save them all the time, bail them out. And so it really, the out of wedlock births really results in all kinds of social ills. And that's the thing that just is a pox on the future, whatever future America has. That's a just a terrible blight, not only right now, but on the future of the country. And it, you know, it's from that aspect alone, it's not looking very well. So, but that really, when I say moral decline, that the kids out of wedlock births, kids being born out of outside of marriage, don't have a mom, and you know, don't have a dad. They just have mom, and mom's on welfare. Chances are that you know, the deck stacked against them, and chances are, in aggregate, it's statistically provable they just don't do as well. So, and therefore, they do end up being more of them end up being more suggestible, and you end up with more social ills. And that's really when the decline of America certainly started in earnest, was probably back in the, you know, in the 60s, late 60s. That's when the outside of marriage birth started to really take off, and then it kind of snowballed to the point today where more than 50% of all kids are born outside of marriage. That's a horrible statistic. It's not fair to those kids, and, you know, because they're just, you know, they're just unwanted, kind of unwanted byproducts of sex. And they don't have, there's not even a dad there to be an influence. And I'm, you know, mom can do it. I'm not saying that mom can't raise kids by herself, but and do a decent job, because it's been done before. Kids do survive that, but like as not, you know, for the vast majority of kids, they do need somebody there to be the dad, to be that, you know, to be the dad influence, and not just a, you know, there's a reason why kids, you know, we have mom and a dad. You know, human beings are not, you know, there are animals certainly that, you know, where dad's just the sperm donor and there is no father role. But with human beings, the father has to play a role. And if the father's not present, don't even know who the father is, that's a sad thing. And it because it really puts a cloud over the child's future. Kind of along the same lines, you know, with the parents, the super prosperous parents in the super prosperous state of California kind of spoiling their kids, and then that producing kooky politics. I realized that spoiled kids, spoiled people that have just everything handed to them on a silver platter, have a tendency to think, oh, well, everybody else should have this. This just obviously just grows on trees. The parents never taught them how to work for it. It just obviously grows on trees. And so then they begin to think, oh, well, you know, I'm in favor of the government just giving handouts. That's how I've lived my life. I want these other people to be able to do it too. You know, and using someone else's money. They've never been taught how to work. They've never been taught how to earn money for themselves. And so I think that's one of the things that tends to produce sort of this silly liberal politics that really seems to pervade the country today. And it really starts with spoiled kids. I've now made it home. I've been home probably, I don't know, 2 hours, maybe quite. Yeah, about 2 hours, I guess. So after I got home, I cooked myself something to eat. And while I was cooking myself something to eat, I turned on one of my little Western Digital boxes and went to Netflix. And I ended up watching a documentary movie that I had in my queue. It's called, I'm probably going to mispronounce it, Mojados Through the Night. And what it's about, it's these four Mexicans that are sneaking into Texas, across the Texas desert. And this would have been February 2003. And the filmmaker was obviously an American. And so he went with them, basically, and kind of documented the trip. And, of course, they had bad weather. It rained, and it was there were a couple of cold fronts. And, you know, I think once or twice the temperature dipped below freezing. So, you know, and it of course, it started in Mexico, and it started, you know, showing their wives and kids and what have you, and they're going north so they can make money, obviously, and send it back home. And, you know, so, but in any case, it's kind of a, it was really kind of a sad story, because they made it to this safe house, and then the guy from the safe house said, hey, the Border Patrol is just up the road, you got to get out of here. You got to leave now. And so they walked off into the desert again. And I think one of them ended up walking all the way to Austin, Texas. And then three of them got caught by the Border Patrol and deported. One of them decided, this is ridiculous. I'm just going to go back home to my wife and kids. This isn't worth it. And then the other two paid some coyote to get them, you know, to get them in, you know, promised them an easy trip into the U.S. And so they made it back in, and they ran into some more bad weather. And then it kind, you know, then the guy, the director said he just kind of, after that, they got to a certain point and he just lost contact with them, never heard from them again. Then they ended the movie with this news report from somewhere in South Texas. You know, they had found there's a border checkpoint at I think it's on Highway 281 at Falfurrias, Texas, and they'd found like three bodies. You know, because it got below freezing, there were three bodies that they found, you know, like half a mile off the highway. So you know, they really didn't know that that was them. That's just the way the director chose to end the movie, because he really didn't know if the other two with the coyote actually made it back. Now, you know, those of you who are unfamiliar with the term coyote, it's a person that they pay to smuggle them across the border. You know, and in this case, they had agreed to pay this coyote $2,000 a piece out of their future wages. So, but it's kind of a sad story. And I think what the saddest part of the story is that, you know, they've got a country down there in Mexico, yet it's so screwed up politically. There's no reason in the world why they couldn't have just as nice a life there as we have here. Their political system is screwed up. They've got people that are basically kind of running the country. There's this elite that runs the country, and they benefit by having this massive, keeping this massive sort of, I can't think of the word, under, I want to say, it's not really under culture, but an underclass. Mexico, you know, they have this massive underclass people that, so that's the way the political system is set up, and they deliberately keep those people as poor, you know, poor as possible, in order to control them, to make them dependent, and to keep them down. And, it's because in large part, I think, of the culture that they have, not necessarily the Mexican culture, but there's just this culture that kind of gets bred into them once they're born into that system, and they have a hard time. It's hard to break a culture like that. It's kind of like, if you were born in an inner city ghetto, same sort of mindset. You end up kind of being a permanent underclass, and then you got these people that, in the case of the inner city ghettos, like in Chicago, New York, any big city that has a big inner city ghetto problem, there are people that ostensibly are trying to help these people that end up kind of keeping them locked into a hellish life. And so the real tragedy of the Mexican story is the fact that what's the difference between the United States and Mexico? It's simply a different, we have different values, or at least we have had different values. Now that those values are really under assault, but that really is the difference. We've got a different value system because you just have a basically an imaginary line that's a border. Of course, they've it's part of its river and fence and what have you, but it's basically just a line, and on one side you've got a prosperous culture, and on the other side you've got massive poverty. And other than that, it's just basically it's a value system, and it's really a tragic thing because those people, as I say, they've got a beautiful country down there. It's got plenty of resources. They could have a good life if they had a, if they just could somehow improve their really improve their value system. But and the way they, and beyond that, I say value system, but it's more than that. If they could somehow get to the point where they could give up the brainwashing, because part of the thing with culture is that there's a lot of brainwashing involved. If you're born into an inner city ghetto, the people around you are going to brainwash you. Your parents are going to brainwash you. Whoever you're around, you're going to end up being brainwashed by that culture. And then it's, once you kind of grow up in something like that, it's very difficult to shake it. There's an old saying, you can take the country, what is it? You can take the man out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the man. Meaning, and there's variations of that saying, but kind of meaning that once someone is sort of inculcated with a certain culture, you can take them out of it, but you can't take the culture out of them. So I don't know. Mexico's kind of a tragedy, and I would like for Mexico to be able to thrive. Why can't it thrive like the United States has? Why can't it thrive like China is at this point? Why can't it thrive like parts of India are at this point? There's really no reason in the world except, in the same story in Africa. Africa's a big, giant continent, all kinds of resources. There's no reason in the world why they couldn't thrive, with the exception that, in large part, they've got this culture thing that, where they end up kind of being brainwashed by it, and then they can't, really, it gets perpetuated and they can't escape from it. And then they've got some, there's always some elite person that's kind of ruling over them. And it's really a tragic thing. It really is. I would like everyone in the world to be able to live a decent life. But everybody can't, everybody can't come here. It has to be people can immigrate. I don't have any problem with people immigrating, but they have to be, they got to do it legally. And, why can't we improve Mexico? Why can't, that would eliminate a lot of the problem, is if we could really figure out ways of helping them improve their own country. And, because as I say, there's no reason in the world. Why are the Canadians Now, Ian's up there listening. How come the Canadians are just as prosperous as the people in the U.S.? What's the difference? What's the difference between the people in the U.S. and the people, you know, in Canada and the people in Mexico? It's got to do with the value system, and it's got to do with how much people are brainwashed, how badly brainwashed the culture is. And I submit that if you have a really badly brainwashed people, you know, in a culture, that, you know, chances are it's going to be a third, you know, if it's a third world culture, then, you know, that it's going to remain that. Now, the problem we're having in the U.S. is that we're kind of turning into a third world, because we've kind of lost our values, and we've got all these, you know, half of the country, I believe, is brainwashed. Half of the population of the U.S. is, you know, they don't know whether they're coming or going as far as common sense. They're separated from their common sense, and they're willing to submit to whatever the greatest pressure is. So we're headed to become a third world country, you know, and you know, it's just hanging by a thread at this point. You know, I wouldn't, you know, if I had kids, I'd really be worried about it, because what kind of future are they going to have? Probably, you know, there's a good chance they're not going to have a very good one. But, so in any case, it's a real tragedy, because there's no reason in the world why they could, you know, why the people in Mexico couldn't have just as prosperous a country, if not more so. Because they've got a beautiful country, they've got a, you know, all kinds of resources, you know, and you know, Mexican people are basically, you know, they're nice people. I don't have any problem with Mexican people. There's nothing wrong with them, with the exception that they've got this system in place, and then of course you've got people that you know, they've got elite families down there that run that place that aren't about to allow the situation to kind of straighten out. There are people that benefit from keeping people down, and that part of it, there is some truth to that. Now, like in the ghetto, you know, they say, "Oh, the man wants to keep us down." Well, they're partially right, because the people that run the welfare systems, you know, that are giving them, spoiling them, you know, like I was talking about in the clip earlier while I was still driving, kind of spoiling them, giving them stuff and so on and so forth, just enough to where they're comfortable. You know, I was answering one of these messages on Facebook a couple of days ago, and I ended up writing this little phrase, you know, government handouts end up producing sloth. If you're familiar with the concept of sloth, means being kind of lazy and not wanting to work. Government handouts produce sloth, but if you have hot taxes that are too high, that produces sloth as well. So you can kind of, you know, you raise taxes too much and give people that aren't working, you know, you kind of rob them of their motivation. On the one hand, it produces sloth, but if you raise taxes too much, that removes people's motivation to work. And it produces sloth again on the other side. So, but the answer really is for people to come back to their common sense. And that's not an easy thing. You know, we really do need a sort of a worldwide moral revival. And I say moral, but we need a, you know, people need to become, you know, find some way of becoming genuine. But the problem is that there are... you know, there's a good percentage of, at least, I don't know, 50% of the people in the United States are probably hopelessly brainwashed. And then who knows what part of the world population is hopelessly brainwashed. You know, and they're not, you know, you can look at a brainwashed person and it seems like they're normal. It seems like they may be a normal person, but they're not genuine. When it comes right down to it, they don't have any genuine identity of their own. They're simply products of whatever their environment is. And, you know, they kind of go along to get along. So, but you know, really, and then the other part of prosperity, what produces prosperity is just people working, you know, you get people working and being, you know, allow them to, you know, encourage them, allow them to be ingenious, and, you know, encourage them to work, and then people can, you know, they're able to kind of buy and sell and sort of trade the value of their work. But if you've got people running the government that kind of screw the money system over, and then they're kind of manipulating people, you know, just in such a way to kind of keep the brainwashing going, and you know, you end up with a real mess. And but you know, it really is a sad thing that these people are trying to come north, because it's you know, if this movie that I just watched, and I'm going to play the trailer for it that I found. I found this trailer for it. I'm going to play in just a little bit. But this movie, you know, the tragic thing is, you know, when they were in, you know, in Mexico, they looked healthy. Obviously, they were poor, but they had a place to live, and their kids looked healthy. The kids were very cute. The wife looked, you know, nice. They had nice clothes. But the problem is, you know, they think they can come north and, you know, just really rake in the cash. So, you know, it really, and they know that it's a difficult trip to walk across a good, you know, good chunk of that Texas desert. It's difficult. It's harrowing. You know, they really do risk dying to come here. You know, why, you know, I would like to see them prosper where they're at. You know, I want, you know, I'd love to see them prosper where they're at. You know, that's the real, if you want to talk about human rights and, so on and so forth, why in the world can't they prosper where they're at? What is wrong with their government that they cannot prosper where they're at? You know, what, you know, Haiti's another example. Why can't Haiti prosper right where it's at? You know, because it, you know, or Cuba's another one. Why can't it prosper? There's something wrong with the culture. And of course, there's some, and certainly in the case of Cuba, there's certainly something wrong with the government. There's something terribly wrong with the system that they have, because you know, it the system keeps them down and it robs them of their motivation. And of course, you end up with, you know, just people that are in a sorry state. You know, they're really in a sad state. You know, as I say, you could take a country like Mexico, and if you could kind of encourage people to have the right motivation and to, you know, where they would be able to, kind of work and reap the benefits of their work and so on and so forth, you know, you could have a completely different place. But as it is, there's bribery everywhere. There's a lot of corruption in Mexico. The Mexican officials, you know, the people that work for the government, there's lots and lots of corruption. And there are people that absolutely benefit from keeping those people, just, you know, keep them down and grind the heel in their face. And, you know, it's really tragic. It really is tragic. So, but in any case, if you're on Netflix, that's, it's called Mojados, let me make sure I'm going to spell it right, Mojados, Through the Night, and I guess this was released in 2004, so I'm going to go ahead and play the trailer for that. So here it is.
Hey, turn your fucking off. It's off. It's off.
Once you commit yourself in this part of the country, you better keep going.
Is on top.
So that was the trailer for Mojados Through the Night, and I recommend you watch that. It's really really quite interesting, and it, you know, kind of documents a really a sad story. And again, the tragedy is, why can't they have prosperous life in Mexico? You know, they've got this beautiful country down there. Why can't they have a prosperous life there? It's really sad. So, anyway, probably better be cutting this off, get this thing put together, and see if I can't get to bed here in just a bit. Hope everyone had a great weekend. Hope you have a great week coming up. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.